Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome to Siempre Palante. Palante.
Hola mi gente, welcome to Siempre Palante, Always Forward. I'm your host, Giraldo Luis Alvarez. Gracias for listening. In this episode, our guest shares his humble beginnings growing up in Panama. Inspired by his tío, he found his passion that led him to Nueva York, La Gran Manzana. New York embraced him because he was relentless in his pursuit for El Sueño Americano. Wu-Tang, Jay-Z, Big Pun, The Lox, Gangstar, House of Pain. You heard that right. Those are just a few of more than 150 album covers, countless magazines and events his photography has blessed with his talents. As the creator of the official Latino Film and Arts Festival, he is dedicated to ensure the Latinx community is well represented in Hollywood. This Panameño can't stop and won't stop. Please welcome creative director, filmmaker, photographer, Danny Hastings. ¿Quién es Danny Hastings?
Diablo, man, that's a crazy question. If I was to sum it all up, I think I am someone that was blessed to do whatever he wanted to do, what's passionate to him, what matters to him, and it's connected to culture, not only his Latino side, but music, hip-hop, Latin music, our roots, everything that comes from our ancestors, like indigenous, African, mixture, we're Spaniard, and somebody that anchors himself in the truth of everything. I don't fall for any of the spoon-fed crap that was given to all of us, from religion to politics to government to everything, like who we are. They try to define who we are. Here we are talking about that we're Latinos and we're not even Latinos. Just think about how big that shit is. We're arguing about Latinx and Latine, and I'm 100% Latino. Money, we're not even Latinos, bro. The word Latino comes from Italy. There's a city in Italy called Latina. They labeled us whatever they wanted to label us because we were a new human genre. There were indigenous people, there were African people, and there were Caucasians. And when they all got down together, and well, it's not like they got down together. It's not like they party together and be like, yeah, let's go get down together. When they rape indigenous people and African people, we came out. And we came out like me, we came out like you, and we came out like Afro-Latinos, indigenous Latinos. And they say, you know what? You all Latin America. How does that even make sense, bro? Let's just start with that.
It doesn't, hermano. And thank you for those jewels and those diamonds of wisdom, because that's what the show's about too, is unpacking, is understanding, but putting it out there so people can educate themselves so they can take this and go, wait a second. So where is Danny pulling this from? And start reading and start asking questions that a lot of people don't ask. There's people that have all their lives don't understand what you just said, the labels. You hit it right on the head, indigenous, because it all goes back. If you peel those layers enough and you get right down to the core of it, it's the indigenous people that were here that things were stolen from them, the land, their women, the children, the culture. We were talking a little bit about the wave, the new generation, the youth that's understanding and embracing this new knowledge. The knowledge we didn't have, we had to find it. We had to search.
I think to complement what you're saying, we didn't have the resources that this new generation had. We had to dig in books. You're walking out 125th, you see Malcolm X's books, you see Albizu Campos' book, you see Fidel Castro's book, and you start reading. I'm not getting political here. You start reading history. Wait, that happened? And it was up to you to actually read and educate yourself. But this generation has it even better, man. Like, they could just Google that shit and the shit will come out. I personally don't think that the powers that be creating all this stuff realized what was about to happen. The finding of the truth. We're finding indigenous American children, massive graves in Canada, bro. People are finding for the first time the massacre in Tulsa. They burned a whole Black Wall Street. We didn't know this. I mean, the other day, Tom Hanks was like, how come I didn't know this? Tom fucking Hanks was talking about, like, I didn't know about Tulsa.
And you know what's interesting, Danny, that for every Black Wall Street, for every indigenous massacre, think about how many we don't know about. That's what's deeper. So we go to the narrative, the power of the pen, who's writing the books, who's telling the story. Fast forward, you started telling the story through the lens of a camera, photography. But you don't forget where you come from. And a lot of these values were instilled very young, and you saw it, you heard it, you felt it with familia. So tell me about some of those inspirations growing up, a little bit about Danny Hastings, before the world knew Danny Hastings, where he originated from.
I have a few different inspirations. American culture was a big influence in me because when I was growing up, I grew up in Panama. Y mi mamá es de Panamá, mi mamá es Chiriquí. Saludo a todos los panameños ahí. No somos muchos acá, pero we're strong. When I was becoming a teenager, my mom was like, yo, tú eres un gringo. I'm like, why? What is a gringo? I don't even know. I was born here in California, but I was raised in Panama. So all I know was Spanish, everything, you know, from Chespirito to merengue, salsa, La Fania, Fernandito Villalona, all that shit, like Tabu Combo. I used to listen to Haitian music, calypso, everything, reggae, all of that was Danny before 15 years old. Around 14, 15, my uncle was a photographer in Panama, but he's like a journalist. He babysit us one time, I never forget. He's like, oh, I gotta go. You guys gotta roll with me. And we were like 8 years old, 9 years old, and we kind of roll with Tio. And Tio had the camera. He loads up the camera, and I was like all into like looking at the film and putting the film in the camera. And he's like, get in the car, let's go. We go into a murder scene with the yellow tape and police lines, and we were like, whoa, what is this? And one thing that struck me was that everybody knew my uncle. Hey, what's up, Vale? Valenzuela is his name. So he was like, hey, what's up, Vale? Vale, hey, Vale, Vale. You know, and he was like, hey, you know, saying what's up to everybody. On the time muerto, whatever, whatever. I didn't get to see where he was taking pictures because obviously they're trying to protect me. Later on, I found out what he was doing. I was like, yo, that's crazy. Take a picture of a dead body. That's what he goes down in third world countries. So he went and took a picture. But what struck me was the access that he had through police line. Police people saying what's up to him, everybody. And my uncle was that type of dude, that everybody. And then with the camera, he was always with the camera taking pictures and take a picture of me. Everybody wanted a picture. So as soon as I got to high school, I got my hands on my first camera. And I was the director of the yearbook in 1984, 85. And I grabbed a camera and started taking pictures. And I got access, bro. And the high school gave me a lot of access. So I didn't have to go to classes. I can leave, go and take pictures. And there's a play happening at the city capital, whatever. And the representation from the high school. I was like, I gotta go, you know? It was like an easy pass too, bro. Like I was B's and C's. And I was like, all right, I'm passing all this. Whatever. Got my camera. Bro, I fell in love with the art. When I came to New York, I came with a camera. It was culture shock because Panama es como Puerto Rico. Palm trees, beaches, Balboas, Panama, Soberana, we have our beers. By the time you come to New York, you're like, what the hell is this, man? Where did I came to? I started finding out that there were a lot of kids like me too. I wound up in Jackson Heights and I came with the camera and the same shit, taking pictures with everybody. Everybody's like, yo, D, come through, blah, blah, blah. And We didn't really speak that much English, me and my brother. Funny enough, we landed in the same neighborhood that DJ Camilo grew up on. So we know Camilo since we were teens too. That's my brother right there, DJ Camilo. I know his family and everybody in Jackson Heights, bro. I started continuing taking pictures of all of us when we were teenagers and started gravitating towards hip hop. Hip hop was calling me. I think the first records that I started listening to was Paid in Full, Boogie Down Productions, Cool G Rap. That's what my friends were listening to. And we started learning, right? Quick. It was the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s. Streets. It was insane. Some dudes didn't make it. Some dudes did. And God bless. A lot of us are still here. And some find their way. And we grew up in New York City, man.
So New York City, I'm going to pause this mixtape that we compiling here because we're doing a special mix. And let me tell you, what you dropped already, I got a lot of questions. But one of the main questions, you brought it up earlier, you talked about truth. You anchor in truth and you love access. So you put those two together. Those are very powerful. We know about the access because that was Theo. Shout out to Theo. But the truth piece, where was that first encounter where you might have caught it indirectly, but it was instilled in you? And then to this day, like, I mean, you anchor in truth, and that's a powerful statement.
In Panama, we have a special day called El 9 de Enero. El 9 de Enero is big time for us Panamanians. What happened in January 9th, the Panama Canal was a territory that the United States pretty much invaded. We're going to make this canal over here. We're going to draw the line over here. Y'all motherfuckers stay over there. You can't come in your own country. They didn't let any Panamanians come in at all. It was the U.S. Army, baby. That shit was roadblocked and nobody can come in. If you're a Panamanian, you have to go to a bridge to cross the Panama Canal to go to the other side of Panama. They cut Panama in half, basically. And they just made the canal right through it. And really, they didn't give a f-. And they were like, hey, nobody's coming here, right? But El 9 de Enero, I think it was like the 60s or 50s, a group of students were protesting in front of the gates of the canal zone, like, yo, this is our land. We can walk through it, whatever, whatever. And they got shot. They got killed. Students, like young 18, 19-year-olds, like 17-year-olds. So we grew up with that history. And in Panama, they give us the Panamanian side. In America, they probably give you the whole invasion side. I don't know. I guess we're trying to invade the canal zone or something, which is part of our land, right? Needless to say, one of our leaders negotiated the territory back. So the canal is now Panama and now it's a whole country. And it probably took a lot of work, but that was part of the truth that I think that settled with me to understand the imperialistic war the United States was doing outside the United States. I didn't know much about what they did inside the United States. That comes later when I came to New York. But what they were doing outside, I was very aware what they were doing with the Contras in Nicaragua and Central America and destabilizing that whole shit and what they were doing in Cuba and Puerto Rico. And mind you, I'm not against this country at all. I love who we are and what we stand for, the better part of it. The people like us and everyone of all nationalities, all colors. But the kind of shit that they were doing and still do, it's really repugnant. They don't really follow their words, like in God we trust. They don't have God. They don't act with God in it. They want to put a law and smash and just kill, and they're lost. So it's time to put good people into making sure that this is for everyone. So when I came to this country, I found out what they were doing to black people. And then I find out what they did to the natives. And then I find out what they did to Latinos. And then I was like, wow, it's eye-opening because United States has a really great PR campaign that is called Hollywood. When you're down there, man, you're like, holy shit, I want to be like Elvis. You see the best, man. You see space movies. You see everything. Everybody's happy down there. And mind you, probably different today, but we have four channels back then, and that's all you saw, right? I Love Lucy. You see Ricky Ricardo with Lucy, and you're like, vamos pa allá, que esa vaina está buena. Until you get here, you're like, well, I got to be a seamstress my whole life? I got to clean these floors for 50 years? What are you talking about? It's the land of opportunities. If you make your moves right, I'm not saying you can't, just saying they're known to close doors on some people. But needless to say, you know, I roll up my sleeves. I went for mines, bro. That's what you got to do over here. To be honest with you, when you start knowing things like that as a young man, whether you're black, white, Latino, indigenous, you're like, man, I got to move fast. And I got to move faster than everyone else because you can't depend on anything or anybody, especially if you come from humble beginnings.
Did you know, Sabias Que? In 2015, Danny created the official Latino Film and Arts Festival in response to the lack of Latinx representation in Hollywood films and TV shows. Their mission is to showcase, nurture, and support the emerging creative Latinx filmmakers who produce, direct, or write their films in the U.S. The festival is back this year at the Palm Springs Art Museum from December 9th to the 11th in Palm Springs, California. More than 100 films directed by Latinx filmmakers and over 200 Latinx actors will be on the big screen. 34% of the films have young actors in them, ensuring more representation for years to come. Witness history by seeing cinematic excellence showcasing the best Latinx creatives in the U.S. Support the movement and get your tickets today at psmmuseum.org or check the show notes for more info. Apúrate, get your tickets. Tell them Giraldo sent you. Now back to the show.
You don't just have to do it good. You have to do it better than anyone else. And if they're doing excelling at a high level, you got to be on another level they never even seen.
When you're in the moment, you don't know what's happening. My man Bones Malone said it right. He says, I don't do documentaries. I don't write books on it because I was part of the action. Right now, you see documentaries coming up and going back to that. And the people that are doing those documentaries, a lot of them weren't really in there like that. We were part of the action. You don't know what's happening. But what I knew and what I felt was that I was so welcomed. I was a part of it. I never felt that even though I was from Panama, that I was an outsider. I was always part of it. And I think, well, the camera and understanding also like the music, because I didn't gravitate to it just because I saw someone. No, like I was already deep into like Boogie Down production. I was deep into Kool G Rap, Kool Moe Dee, LL Cool J, Run DMC. Like I was NWA. When NWA came out with Burn Hollywood Burn, I was like, what is this? They were talking about the stereotypes and how they treat black people in movies. To me, it was like, yo, that's how they treat Latinos too. We're not even in movies. So it was just really talking to me. I have a really big, wide understanding of music because before all of that, I used to listen to rock and roll and all the revolutionary shit. Like I was listening to The Clash, bro, The Sex Pistols, Iron Maiden, Metallica. I was into like shit that was like, fuck you, you know what I mean? Like, so coming from that to hip hop was still kind of the same energy. It was like all in me, like just understanding all this energy. Yeah, man, I felt welcome. You know, I felt like I was part of it. And I think that that's why I was able to navigate in those spaces. I would go to the hood with my camera. And nothing happened. Nothing never happened to me, bro. Now, I heard stories of people got the shit beat down, equipment stolen, left bloody on the floor. Bro, I've been to the illest parts. And I was always welcome. I was there. So with that being said, I think the opportunity came back to your question when I was part of the culture as well. So I was able to communicate and understanding and really treat the artist like an artist. I was treating the Wu-Tang like another photographer would treat Metallica, or a white photographer would treat U2. The Wu-Tang was my AC/DC. I'm like, man, this is gold. While there was no white photographers that wanted to do this type of stuff. Number one, they weren't paying enough. It was the early 90s, you know. Number two, they were like, gangster, I don't want to risk my shit. Later on, hip hop developed into what it is now. So now everybody wants to do it, right? But back then, it was like that. It was me basically understanding the level of artistry that it took to compose this music, that it took part of the culture as well to develop into that and treat these artists like the rock stars that they were. And when I brought their pictures back, they were like fucking blown away because nobody took pictures like that for them. Everybody was kind of doing the snapshot photography. No disrespect to anyone. I've never been a snapshot photographer. And what I mean by that is like flash on the camera, go around taking pictures. You know, that's cool. There's an art form to that. But I knew that if I want to take it to the next level, I was going to remove that flash from the camera. So my flash was behind them. My flash was on top. My flash was on the bottom. I had two flashes at one time. Then I had three flashes, and the lighting was ridiculous. People didn't know how I did that. And remember, flashes is just the bursts of light. So you kind of have to know what you're doing. But I knew early. It was like 1920. I'm a master of lighting. The people like Anna Leibovitz was doing the shit that I was doing. La Chapelle. And all these big time photographers was doing shit that I was doing when I was like 19, 20. But I was a young Latino kid, sticking to hip hop, doing the stuff that I was doing. And I did what I did, man. You know, it was beautiful. So that's pretty much how the opportunity came. And as I was buying CDs and cassettes and magazines, I started noticing that all the back of the CDs and all the addresses of those magazines were right there in the block that I used to work at. I used to work in downtown Soho in a lab printing pictures. I was like, yo, Rush Management is right around the corner. That's where Third Base is coming from. That's where Run DMC is coming from. EMI is right here and RCA is over there. And I was like, you know what? I got to go over there. Nobody's telling me not to. So, you know, I went there with my portfolio of my friends from Jackson Heights, pictures and friends I used to work with, all Black and Latino. When they saw the pictures, they were like, yo, who are these rappers? It's like, they're not rappers, they're my friends. They're like, wow, you got an eye. And they recognized it immediately. And my first job was House of Pain, a publicity job that was published in The Source magazine. Jump Around was like fucking everywhere, bro. Everywhere. I was ready. When preparation meets opportunity, I was prepared and the opportunity came and I gave them a smashing shot, bro. Like, they just kept talking about that shot. After that, I was able to send that picture to all the labels. Now I have a platinum artist, Who's Danny Hastings? And that went everywhere, man. And they just started hiring me. And if you look at that picture, that is really an outstanding picture. I used to do extra special stuff, like I put texture on top of the negative and print it, and pictures would have like all kinds of textures, and people didn't know. Like I was actually doing art, which is not a photograph of them just standing up in front, and I would post them and get different reactions and different angles. And when I come back, I would do panoramic shots, and I would bring a 4x5 camera, cover myself with a 4x5, looking like a mad scientist. That's the type of stuff I was really giving them photography. And that was the big break up until I shot 36 Chambers. And when I shot 36 Chambers, like in 1993, I was 23 years old, bro, doing stuff that 35-year-olds were doing. After that, dude, I did like 35 album covers in 1 year, which was crazy. I came from nothing, bro. The opportunity, when the opportunity and you're ready, you just gotta go for it, bro. I had a job, and this is 1992, right? 1992, 1991. So remember, minimum wage back then was like $3.35 or $4 or whatever it was. But that first job paid me $60 for one picture to publish it, right? So I was like, man, if I do five of these, that's more than my minimum wage. And there's 7 days a week, so I better start hustling. And then the second job was $500. And then the third job was $1,500. And then I was like, I'm quitting my job, bro. If I did in 1 day what I can do in a month, I'm leaving this shit. And I did. And I did it like without hesitation, bro. And I went to fish my other 1,000. And sometimes it would be 1,000, sometimes it would be 200, sometimes it would be 3, sometimes it would be 5,000. You know what I mean? Like it was just a fun discovery of what one could do. And I think I treated my life like that my entire life. I'm always looking for the next challenge. That keeps me going, bro. From that, I went to music videos, and I started offering brands and you name it, bro. I've done it all and still feel like I need to do more.
that hunger and that passion, that's what it is. You stay hungry.
I got a 35-year-old appetite, bro.
But at the same time, you've connected passion to purpose. And that equals legacy. I talk a lot about that. Mi gente, when you get a chance, take it a step further after you listen. Help support Siempre Pa'lante by making a donation. This helps keep the lights on and, more importantly, brings you more cultural content and live events. Instead of buying that cafecito or fresh bagel, visit linktree.sp.alwaysforward. linktr.ee/sp.alwaysforward. Or go to the show notes for more info. Gracias. Sometimes, and more times than not, we understand now as we're older to celebrate and appreciate and really take it in that moment, even if it's for like a minute. Was there one that could stand out?
I can't just single out one, bro. You know, working with the RZA has been really special. I mean, that guy is so brilliant, and you want to keep working with him because you want some of that brilliantness to rub off. And just every time I learn something from him, working with Premier too, DJ Premier, so real as well, man. That's my brother, J-Root the Damager, Raekwon. I mean, come on, these are like solid, solid dudes. The Gangstar Foundation, rest in peace, Guru. There's so many, bro, working with the Locks, bro. The Locks make me feel like how I feel about my brother. Those dudes are like just a unit, family. I've worked with them from day one and all the way until the last album. People sometimes don't even know that, but I still do work with them. So Big Pun, rest in peace. Big Pun was very special because he was the first Latino that I did that was going platinum and was popular in hip hop. And right before I felt like Latinos could have had a big moment in history, he passed away, and they do what Latinos did back then. They fought through the crumbs for everything. No disrespect to anyone, but it wasn't about the movement anymore. Like I think Pun was creating a movement even not just working with Terror Squad, but working with the Beatnuts. And he was really about it. After that, it dismantled and just, it wasn't what it was. But there's so many special moments from everyone that I can't really single out just one. I saw Old Dirty Bastard and Busta Rhymes battling it out and Jack the Rapper. When I was there, I was just like, what is this? And they were just going at it. And I was in that crowd, 1993, right before I shot the Wu-Tang. So there's so many special moments from
now, all these moments, you work hard for it. You earned every moment. You deserve those moments. There comes moments, you plan one thing, it ends up going the other way. And it's adversity and challenges. Is there a special moment in that space that made you better?
As you start getting known, and basically the fashion industry and the music industry kind of just saw me as this only one type of photographer guy. This is what Danny does, and that's it, which was hip hop, particularly men. But I do some pretty beautiful beauty shots, but I was never considered that. And proof is in the pudding. I just shot a beautiful album cover for a female rock artist, the Pretty Reckless, Taylor Momsen. Go and look at that album cover, Death by Rock and Roll by the Pretty Reckless. And that's my picture. Looks nothing like my hip hop work as well. So I'm very versatile. So I was always conflicted into why they didn't want me to do other than. But I guess that's where I embrace my work even more. I can't really put too much energy into that. I'll just enjoy who welcomes me. And I think it's changed now because you see people of color now in fashion and doing big things like that. But when I was 23, 24, I couldn't even step into a Rolling Stones office. It is what it is. There's not that many black photographers or people of color photographers that got a shot to shoot Rolling Stone covers. It was a click. They will only see you like as what he does, but they had to be looking at my lighting. They had to be looking at my angles. My shots were complicated for photography. I was mixing lighting. I was doing shutter speed changes. I was doing playing with aperture, shutter speed, cross-processing. I was doing a lot of stuff to my pictures. But yeah, that's one of the things that I was just always having a problem, like why they're not. But you know, we know the answer to that.
You use that, though, as energy and fuel to keep driving and doing work. You're still building on something special, which leads me to the word legacy. What does legacy mean to you? And what is your legacy?
It's what you leave behind, right? For people to remember your name and remember your work. And that's pretty much it, because you're not going to be able to see it. You're not going to be able to read it. I mean, you see it like, but when you're alive, it's your body of work. They start opening the books and they start looking at, like, blowing their minds on how they did this. How was he able to do this? I want my legacy to be kind of like a Gordon Parks type of legacy. And I'm not comparing myself to Gordon Parks at all, by no means. But I like the fact that he was a photographer. And he was also a filmmaker, and he did movies, and he did some iconic photography work, and some of his movies have branded culture from his community. And that's kind of like how I see my legacy sort of working itself out as well, leaving a good name and some good work that people can enjoy forever. So shout out to Gordon Parks, the legend. Yo, what's up, mi gente? What's going on, New York City? From New York to Cali, I want to thank my man, Geraldo, from Siempre Palante. Always forward, man. Thank you for giving me the blessing and the opportunity to join you in a conversation. My name is Danny Hastings. You can follow me on Danny Hastings all across the platforms and Official Latino also. It's been a blessing. Stay blessed anywhere you are, everywhere you are. This being one of the best ones yet. Gangstar Forever. Woo-hoo!
The legacy, though, you're being humble here because we're going to pull this out here. We're going to put it right on display. We're going to talk about the official Latino Film Festival because that's part of your legacy, hermano. What you're building is about narrative. It's about representation. It's about being seen and heard, amplifying the voice. You got something special going on for a couple days at the Palm Springs Art Museum. What is this about? Talk to us about the official Latino Film Festival.
It's a movement recognizing the cinematic excellence of what Latinos are creating here in the United States. It's a young generation, bro. I think it's the generation that is going to flip the script. They don't want to hear my generation saying, we paved the way for you. Rightfully so, because we haven't paved shit. We as OGs need to understand that. I seen OGs going up there talking like, we've paved the way for you, you're standing on shoulders and all this crap. And we're only 4% representation in Hollywood. That means 4 out of 100 actors are Latinos, and 2 of them are stereotypes. So how dare you go up on the podium and talk about you paved the way when Latinos, Latinx actors can't even get hired? So I say to myself, there's gotta be people like me out there. And I started this in 2015 when Alfonso Cuarón won Best Movie with Gravity. And Alfonso Cuarón, a Mexican director, hired George Clooney and Sandra Bullock to be in that movie. And I questioned myself. I was like, wow, so if Alfonso Cuarón would have Mexicans in this movie, him being from Mexico, would have won an Oscar. And people were replying me, hell no, you know how it is. That's not going to happen. You know, it will never win an Oscar. He had to play the game. No disrespect. The man is quite brilliant. I love his movies. But then I was like, how sad. Here you have a group of people from a community that is dying for representation. And then our directors and our producers have been told that, hey, if you put Latinos in there, nobody's going to see that movie. And they believe it. And then they look the other way. And then they go with what Hollywood tells them to do. And that's why we wind up in 2% representation. So I started talking about it on Facebook when Facebook was dope. I got a bunch of replies. I was like, do something about it, man. Stop bitching. I was like, all right, you know what? Yeah, I'll do something about it. I said, I'm going to start a film festival. I'm going to give $1,000 to a Latino filmmaker that puts a Latino in front of the camera in a movie. And Best Short wins $1,000. That was in 2015. Bro, I got 500 submissions, man. And I was like, yo, my people are telling me to do this. And I couldn't look back. It absorbed me. It's my creation. It's like my love for the community, my legacy, my like, yo, I got to go in. I've been pounding. We landed HBO 3 years ago and we were able to place officially 9 Latinx films on HBO, and directly and indirectly was like 16, 17 that came from the festival into HBO. Pandemic hit, so it rocked us a little bit, trying to find the online situation because pandemic, nobody could come out. But baby, we're back on the spot right now, man, with the Palm Springs Art Museum in Palm Springs, beautiful city in California. So when you're freezing your balls in New York, man, you come to Palm Springs, it's like 70 degrees. Yo, it's going to be lit. We curated 100 films written, directed by Latinas and Latinos in the U.S. that have a Latino or Latino in it. There's some really, really great films that showcase our diversity. from Afro-Latino to Indigenous to the LGBTQ plus community. We have 34% movies that include children acting in it. Not to say that the movies are for children. Some of the stuff kids can watch. But kids that are acting that will blow your mind, bro, and actually correlates with what's happening right now in Netflix, which I'm very excited with Wednesday, the Addams Family spinoff with Wednesday, with a young Latina named Jenna Ortega, super young, doing Wednesday. And when you see her acting and I see this young talent, 34% of our movies have young talent like her in it, I'm seeing the future is going to be Latinx, baby. It's going to be Latino and Latina. So it feels good that I'm at the forefront of watching all these films and curating them with the museum, with the programmer as well. Shout outs to Luisa Heredia and Adam Lerner from the museum, from the Palm Springs Art Museum, that basically believed in the mission and wanted to be part of it. So we're partners. The museum is beautiful, bro. It's got like a top of the line theater that the films are going to be projected on. The filmmakers are going to be feeling special. And I think it really goes with the cinematic excellence that our community is producing. They deserve it. And they're the stars of it. And December 9th to the 11th, we're going to have a great show, man. We're also highlighting the life of Pepe Serna. Pepe Serna has been in movies like Car Wash, Scarface. He was the guy that, you remember that scene with the chainsaw in the bathroom? He's the guy that gets caught up. So, and he's been in 100 movies. I'm doing a disservice to his contribution to our films, but he's been in so many. I mean, coming from theater, he's in our festival, bro. And we're honoring him. We're giving him his flowers. We got a great film by a cast of Latinas and Latinos called All's Well. The one, the Tribeca Film Festival Best Script. Elizabeth Rodriguez pioneered that. She's been on Orange is the New Black, as well as many TV shows. Yeah, man, we got some big heavy hitters coming to the festivals. I can't wait, man. We're opening the film festival with a group of Latina filmmakers called Las Jefas. And we're going to see like 8 films written, directed, and produced by Latinas. And you're going to see like all kinds of genre, from horror to sci-fi to drama to comedy, and all packing a punch. And that's how we opened the festival. And we've been doing this for 8 years, bro.
Check it out, mi gente. Support. And if you can't attend, you're tied up, you have a commitment, go to the site, still donate. Buy a ticket for someone so they can go pay it forward. Sponsor a school of young Latino, Latina film directors. Sponsor them to go. Sponsor someone that doesn't have a means. There's many ways we can support. Don't get locked in. Oh, yo no puedo ir porque yo estoy ocupado. Tú tenías dinero para comprar cosas en Black Friday. Well, think about legacy, narrative, and moving the culture forward. And you just don't have to be Latinx, Latino, Chicano, Chicano. All cultures. Support. Because this thing is on that next level, as my friend Danny Hastings is. Gracias a ti, hermano. Te agradezco. Te deseo lo mejor y más. And you know how we roll. Siempre pa'lante.
Siempre pa'lante como el elefante. You already know.
Gracias, Danny, for sharing your story. As mi hermano Sano, host and founder of Latin Connect at SOBs in New York, once said, you put in work, you get work. Don't stop and keep it moving. Danny, you're el sueño americano, the American dream that continues to inspire the masses. Hollywood, get ready, because this movement is bigger than you could imagine. Siempre pa'lante, hermano. Always forward. Te deseo lo mejor y más. Mi gente, don't forget to rate, review, follow, like, subscribe, and share. You can find the show via Anchor.fm, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Check the show notes to learn more about Danny and the official Latino Film and Arts Festival. A special Pa'lante shout out goes to my team, guests, and listeners. Gracias for your support. One more episode before we take a breakecito for the holidays and come back in the new year. Be sure to tune in and tell a friend. Hasta la próxima. Pa'lante.